Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast with your hosts, Nate and Andy, this week. Kind of Micah. Micah was here for 10 minutes.
Well, we have Micah for a minute.
Yeah. If he was on the show for 10 minutes, I'd be surprised. It was not long, but he didn't do anything wrong. He's got a sick kid at home. I'm not going to give him too much shit. He actually has carried the show for the first time. He did his let's see here. Okay, so
solo episode.
Yeah, so let's see. 2 weeks ago, was it both of you? Yeah, both of you were 2 weeks
ago. Yeah, it was me and him.
I missed my first ever show, and then last week
it went back to back with missing them.
I missed again, and Micah was by himself, and he hit record the right way. We actually got it done. So actually, I enjoyed listening to that show because he recorded with
it was a good episode.
Yeah, he recorded with our buddy Bryce James, and they recorded out on his back deck. And so
I did like the background
noise. Yeah, the birds. I enjoyed it. It was soothing. It was soothing. Bryce has got a soothing voice too.
It was.
But yeah, so I'm not gonna give him too much shit. He's got a sick daughter at home. He tried coming on the show, but she kinda, you know, she's a little girl, so she was talking and you know, all that stuff. So he dropped right after I asked him a question. But
he gone.
But, yeah, so today we've got Ben Westfall with the National Deer Association. Ben wrote an article that is titled, I forget the title every time, Four Ways Deer Carry Wildlife in Conservation, something like that. Carry conservation on their backs. I was close. It was a thought-provoking show for me to – or article to read. So I reached out to Ben, like I say in the show, and he came on and talked about the article. So that's what we do in this show.
I really think it's a good one. It's pretty evident information, but I've never stopped to think about it. Like if now that we've talked about it, it's like, oh yeah, well duh, you know, but I never thought to think about that, the stuff we discuss, you know, like it's just,
I never knew the actual numbers. Like, I didn't realize there were 10 million, you know, deer tag sales compared to the number two animal being the turkey at 3 million. Like, I knew deer drove everything. You know, well, that's one.
They're going to know the answers now.
I knew deer drove everything, but I didn't realize, you know, some of the stuff that he talks about. And that was, that's why I wanted to, you know, it made me think, it made you think, hopefully it makes the listener think a little bit more about it, and, you know, maybe they get involved in some way, shape, or form, you know, in helping conservation. Or maybe there's a bunch of turkey hunters that are out there like, this is bullshit. We want more tag sales, so they go buy more tags next year. I don't know. But
pump them numbers up.
Get them numbers inflated. Okay, so I got to tell you a story. Did I tell you my coyote hunting story? I can't remember if I talked to you or not.
I think we did talk about that.
About the one where I got a deer enjoyment after the hunt?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you want me to tell the story real quick? Because it's pretty funny.
Go for it.
All right, so I got a farmer who's got a issue with losing some lambs, right? So he calls me and he's like, hey, I need you out here to hunt these coyotes. I'm like, all right, I'll come out soon. So one evening I go out, just, you know, right, you know, an hour before dark or whatever, and, take one of our buddies with us and, or with me. And the landowner, I've never been to this guy's house when I've hunted. So I went to his house and he shows us how to get back to the fields and stuff. And I'm like, cool. Well, he stays with us, which is perfectly fine, right? No big deal. Well, our buddy lets a howl out, and we were just going to let it sit for a while. And so the farmer gets a phone call and starts talking on the phone behind us like 20 feet, just like you and I are talking right now. And so me and our buddy are kind of looking at each other, and we're like, you got to be shitting me. You know, oh, great. And then next thing I know, I catch a movement out of the corner of my eye, and a coyote is walking in silent. So I'm like, hey, coyote right there. And so me and our buddy try to like flag the farmer down. We're like, shut up, be quiet, because he's talking to you. And, you know, he doesn't have any idea we're trying to get his attention. So I look back at the coyote, and the coyote has seen something. It's stopped. It's looking at us, you know, looking up our direction. And I'm like, it's got to die. It's got to die now. So I shoot it. It's about 150 yards away. Wasn't too terribly far anyways. I shoot it, and then, you know, we let everything calm down. Of course, he jumps out of his pants, the farmer, because he has no idea that anything's even going on. And anyway, so kill a coyote and make him happy. Leave there, take our buddy back home, drop him off. I don't get more than a mile down the road, and I come around a corner, and there's four deer in the road. So I'm like, all right. So I stop, and the deer split, two on each side. And I kind of inch forward, because I've had bad luck with deer hitting my vehicles. My Duramax let two deer ran into the damn thing. When I say two deer ran into it, I mean two deer ran into my truck, like to the side of it as I was driving. So I've tried like speeding past them. I've tried different ways to make this work. So this time I stop and I lay on my horn, and they kind of disperse a little further. So I'm like, perfect. They're out of the way. So I put the foot on the gas. I put my foot on the gas, and I cannot be going more than 5 miles an hour. Tops, dude. Tops. And this little fucking deer runs straight into the side of my truck. I mean, into the side, like in right in the middle of my driver door.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I didn't even stop the truck. I drove all the way home, and I'm just like, you stupid son. Like, I was so pissed off.
How dare you?
It dented the middle of my door, like just the middle of my door.
That's awesome.
And so I call a buddy of mine who does paintless dent repair, and he actually fixed it for me. Can't even tell a deer ever hit it, but I'm just like, I mean, what was that deer thinking? My truck was sitting still. What was it trying to do? So I got to stop driving around at dusk is what I've figured out.
Yeah, we can't let you be out riding past 8 o'clock now. Put a curfew on.
That is the fourth deer that has contacted a vehicle of mine in 4 years. No, I take that back. I'm wrong. That is the fifth. My Duramax got it twice. I had a work van that got it once. I had a work car that got it once. And now this truck. That's five in 5 years.
Jeez.
Yeah, insurance company loves me, man.
Can't go anywhere with you.
Only one of them been a claim. But anyway, okay, so let's get into some sponsors before we do this. Athlon Optics, because an Athlon Optic was used to shoot that coyote the other day, and it did really, really good. Ridiculous, almost, you would say, right?
Ridiculously good optics.
I'm hoping to get them on the show soon.
I got one of the Midas TSR2 red dot right there.
Nice.
I said this a couple of episodes ago, my daughter's little 22 that we're going to learn on has a little peep sight, and she's having trouble being able to close one eye. So I think I'm going to either have to get an eye patch, or we're going to try this red dot and see how that works and kind of get her used to shooting.
You just punch her in the eye and it swells up, and then you don't worry about it.
Close, yeah.
I'm not advocating child abuse, people. It was just a joke.
With a boy, it might happen. With her, I don't know. She's too nice.
She's too nice. And I'm happy to make an announcement. Our buddy Daryl is now an Athlon owner.
Yeah, there we go.
He is now an Athlon owner.
About time we got in something good.
Yeah. I'm happy for him. Happy for him. I need to find out how South Dakota went for him and Russell too. I have not talked to either of them since they went.
I don't have any details. I watched the videos and stuff. I don't have much opinions or details from them.
I need to make a phone call. But yeah, Athlon Optics, check them out and find a dealer near you. Onyx Maps, use our code MWW20 for 20% off. Got to do it on the website. Not that hard to do. But we'll save you. Nope. Well, if you get the elite plan, it's going to save you 20 damn bucks. So,
I can't even begin to tell you how many uses there are for that thing.
Nope. I was just watching a video John Collins did the other day about the compass mode, where, like, you see a coyote over there, you can swing compass mode and it'll tell you, hey, that coyote was 800, or you heard coyotes yipping, and you can say that tree line's 900 yards. So if I want to try to hunt them tomorrow morning out of their beds or out of their dens, then I need to be at this clump of trees because that's about 400, you know, or whatever. So compass mode's one that I don't use a whole lot, but that was a good video John put out for Onyx. So check them out. Black Ovis, man, use the code MWW10 for 10% off. They are doing a lot of things right now. Okay. That's
big just, fall sales coming, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so I'm reading it right now. They're doing a upcoming sales for Father's Day, which is what, next week, like 10 days away or something. Who knows, right?
Next weekend.
I'm sure I'll be working. When this comes out,
it'll be the weekend coming up.
I'm sure I'll be working or doing something for the kids. So Father's Day sale's coming up, and they're having a Crispy sale, which, you know, we're Zamberland folks, but Crispies are badass boots. We all know that. So
You can,
and they're having all kinds of damn sales, dude.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of stuff. So need to get on Black Ovis and check it out.
Definitely keep watching Black Ovis. I don't know if they'll let you partner up our code or not, but it's worth a try.
Hey, it's always no unless you ask.
Exactly.
And also Camelfire.
Then you got Sister.
Yep. Don't want to forget them, right?
Rotating Doors of Deals.
Get that deal.
How does Mike say that?
Well, you say Trail Cam Tuesday, which is horse shit.
Dude, they changed because I was on to them.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what it was.
I had them figured out.
I had them figured out,
and I called them on it, and they changed it.
Huntworth Gear, speaking of awesome gear, and they've got, don't they have a sale going on too? Shit, I'm pretty sure they got a 25% off sale. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do, because you even posted something on Facebook the other day. It was a great time to get everything. I don't remember if
let's see here. It goes through... Well, it's a Father's Day sale, so I would assume it's going to go through at least Father's Day. It's a 25% off sale. Okay? So listen, folks, here's how you can
do this. Better than our 15.
You can either help support us and use a 15% code, MWW15, and we would appreciate you. Or you cannot be an idiot and get the 25% discount for Father's Day, because we don't give a shit. We just want you in Huntworth gear because it's really badass stuff, honestly.
Exactly. It's good stuff.
Yeah, they've got three patterns.
It is good stuff.
You know, they've got Tarnin and Disruption, which they really, you know, push, and then they've got Hidden at the current moment. And I go back and forth between Disruption and Tarnin on which one I like better. Which is why I own both.
I'm a Tarnin guy.
I know you've been a Tarnin guy since the beginning, and I wasn't, and it grew on me big time. So, yeah, check out Huntworth Gear, man. They're awesome company, awesome folks over there. Speaking of awesome companies, Alps Outdoors, man, use our code 2024, the year 2024, Woods Water. And they give our listeners 30% off, man. And that's huge.
That's a massive discount.
Exactly. Sounds like our buddy Pat and Garen are going to try to get in some Alps stuff. I highly recommend the one man. I think I have the Helix tent. I'll have to go look at it, but I took that Helix one man tent out to Wyoming with myself and Russell, and I love that thing. It was easy to set up, easy to pack back up, and we got pissed on twice. All night long, one time, and I never got a
by
drop
the bear
of water.
Who ate your truck?
Nope, thank God. And I never got a drop of water on me, dude. It was terrific. So I was really impressed.
It's quality stuff. Their packs, I mean, from packs to, you know, you get into Alps Mountaineering, which we're kind of talking about with the tents, and then, you know, all their stuff is just quality stuff.
Yep,
they have what you need to be able to go out and brave the elements, or
you know what I loved
whatever
the best
activity you're doing.
I love that tent, I will say that. But I also got one of their 0 degree sleeping bags, the down bag. I think it was is a
oh,
down
yeah.
bag. So here's why I say I love that so much. So when we go out to Colorado, I have this sleeping bag I just bought from Bass Pro, and it's one of those like canvas outers with the like
right.
the flannel inside. And it's a perfectly fine sleeping bag. But I tend to get cold by morning time because our fire usually goes out at camp, you know, middle of the night.
True.
And by the morning time, I'm usually pretty cold for whatever reason, you know, and right. then I get up and get moving. Dude, that thing, I mean, I got hot in the damn thing. So, like, I would wake up and just bundle back up and know that I was going to stay warm. And it was awesome. That sleeping bag was maybe more impressive than the actual tent itself. It was awesome, man. So, in fact, everything I was using as far as camping was Alps stuff. So, check them out. They're an awesome company, Missouri-based, alpsoutdoors.com, or you can get on alpsbrands.com, and you can also check out some of their stuff for mountaineering. It's more of a camping setup, and they've also got, I can't remember the other companies off the top of my head, but a few other sister companies. Browning's one of them. Zamberland Boots, yep. Speaking of awesome boots, we already talked about them, but zamberlandusa.com. I don't know. We wear them a lot. I guess that's like that's a selling point right there. Hey, do you have these boots? Yeah. Do you wear them a lot? Yeah. Oh, well, then that must mean they're good. Right?
I use my, I can never say the name right, but the Salates or whatever they're called, I wear them those are my farming and work boots. Like, they're like a mid, like three-quarter shoe type deal.
Yep.
And they're rock solid. They're a big toe guard on them.
Yep.
Good tread. Like, it's one of their cheaper and simpler boots, but I yeah. wear them daily.
So the one I like is the Anabasis, which is because it's a mid, mm-hmm. mid ankle, yep. I guess you'd call it, right? The Salates that I have are like a low, and they probably do make a mid Salate, right. but the and it's really lightweight. It's almost like a tennis shoe, but it's a boot, and right. it's Gore-Tec. So you're basically like yep. wearing a shoe, but it's a boot and waterproof. It's freaking awesome.
I have the low version of those.
Okay, so you and I have the opposite.
And I do like those.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So check them out. Reveal Cameras by Tacticam. I'm starting to get the itch. I'm curious what's out of my places. We'll see. Somewhere around, I'll be on vacation 4th of July, but somewhere around that time, I'm planning to get them out. And we are hoping to have Reveal on also decently soon to do a show on cameras. It's a good time to do it. Everybody's starting to put them out. Seems like a lot of people put cameras out around that July 4th date.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're like Andy, you just never went and got them. So they're kind of out, kind of not, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, they can take it.
I got some security cameras out. I got some, yeah.
Yeah. Some.
I got a couple still pumping out
some,
there.
So. Some cameras that just are looking pretty on a tree.
I got some that are kind of monitoring the property that I can see who's in and out and who's supposed to be there or not be there.
Yeah. I need to figure out where that is and just walk by it, you know, with my face covered just to mess with you. And then finally, Habitat Works, Dustin Williams, man. Mention us when you call him, get 15% off. Yep. Get 15% off any of his services, 816-752-7390. Dustin has been busy as hell since probably, the beginning of spring. I know he just blows up with work. But he is a wealth of knowledge. Our guest, Ben, was talking about all the work that's done. Dustin's a perfect example of, you know, whitetail.
Somebody that does the work.
Yeah, whitetail drive people like Dustin into jobs. I mean, if you think about that, right? He's in the private sector. He owns his own business. But he wouldn't do that if people didn't love whitetail so much. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you think about that, it's helping
90% of his business is for whitetail.
Oh, I guarantee it. Guarantee it. So if you think about, it's not just conservation. It's also driving private sector jobs. And Dustin's appreciative right. because he loves what he does. He loves whitetail deer, and he gets to do that for a living. So check Dustin out. Find his Facebook page too if you just search Habitat Works. That is the sponsors for today. You got anything else?
That's it. This is all.
Let's get into our
show. Let's talk to Ben.
Let's do it. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. Okay, with us tonight, we've got Ben Westfall with the National Deer Association. Ben, what's up, man?
Oh, just living the dream, man. How you guys doing tonight?
Well, let's see.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit hungover already. So,
you know, it's Friday night, Micah.
I know. Well, we had a golf tournament today for work, so we kind of started a little earlier.
What you normally would.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's already happening now, which I'm not happy about. But
yeah. So just so everybody knows, we have not recorded our intro yet. We record our intros after the main part of our show for our listeners. Micah is home with a sick kid right now. So my niece, Lainey, is homesick right now. And Micah may or may not make it through the episode. So you may hear him, or you just may never hear him again after this part. So, you know.
Yeah.
So, Micah's carried us for the last 2 weeks. So, hey, he can do what he wants here. So we got a full house tonight. We got Andy, Micah, and Ben, our guest, with us. Ben, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the actual episode we're going to talk about, introduce yourself to us. Tell everybody who you are, what you do for the NDA, and then you were born and raised, or you were raised in Missouri. I don't know if you were born, but anyway, tell us your favorite thing about the Missouri outdoors also.
Yeah, awesome. Happy to do so. So, you know, as you guys know, my name is Ben Westfall. I'm a deer biologist and the conservation coordinator with the National Deer Association. And with that, I primarily oversee our educational programs, primarily the Deer Steward program. We've got online and in-person classes that kind of encompasses everything you need to know A to Z from deer management. You know, if you never hunted deer before, never managed deer before, you can take some of our courses and we'll basically teach you how from the ground up there. But yeah, so I was born and raised in Missouri. I grew up in the suburbs of St. Louis, just outside of Sheffield there. Lived there pretty much my whole life up until moving to Mobile, Alabama, a little over 5 years ago to work for the Quality Deer Management Association at the time. But went to school at Southeast Missouri State University for both my bachelor's and my master's. Actually went back and got my master's a couple years later, but worked for a landowner there in South Missouri in Perryville for a few years, running their quality deer management program before eventually being hired on by QDMA to move down to Southern Alabama and work with landowners down here and help them establish wildlife management cooperatives and kind of get on the same page in regard to management. I was kind of the liaison and the middleman between feuding neighbors. So that was definitely interesting years, but I'm glad that's behind me and that I've moved on to something different for sure.
Yeah, what's funny is, well,
first
I think,
of all, shout out to SEMO on their base.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I think everybody knows I'm a pretty big Mizzou fan here. And, you know, if you don't follow college baseball, I can't talk too much because Missouri didn't make the playoffs. But the Red Hawks knocked Arkansas out of their own regional. So that made me pretty happy. I was very happy, very proud of the SEMO Red Hawks for bringing up, you know, Missouri's heavy work. But, yeah, that's pretty cool.
No doubt.
Yep. Sorry, pig fans. We love you still. We still love you down there in Arkansas. But anyway, but what I was kind of thinking is, you know, Ben, I don't know for a fact, but you have got to be the third or fourth person with the NDA that we've had on now. We've had Lindsay.
Really?
We've had Lindsay Thomas on twice. We had Grant Woods on. He doesn't work for the NDA, but I know he does a lot of stuff conservation wise. Dr. Grant Woods. I'm trying to remember who else we've had. I'm kind of scrolling through these because I wish I would have done that before the show.
We've definitely had somebody else on. Was it Matt? Was it a Matt
being prepared?
Yeah, probably Matt Ross.
Matt's been on.
He's our senior director.
Yeah, Matt Ross was on episode, well, they don't have the episodes numbered anymore, last year. So maybe it's just three of you, but we're just going to run through all of you at some point, you know, putting out good content, good stuff for us to read. But, okay, so the reason we're talking to Ben right now is he wrote an article on May 7th, or it got published May 7th, and the title of the article was 4 Ways Deer Carry Wildlife Conservation on Their Backs. and the title of the article jumped out at me immediately, and so I read it, and I reached out to Ben after that and said, hey, man, would you want to come on and talk about the article? Because, you know, I thought it had a lot of good information in it. So kind of tell us the backstory there, Ben. Like, what made you think about writing it? I mean, had you had that on your mind? Did it just kind of come up? And then we'll get into the actual article and what, you know, what that title means.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the way that this kind of came about was, you know, us as deer hunters, I think a lot of us are pretty well aware of the impact that deer have on conservation overall. But, you know, most people outside of the deer world, just they have no idea how important deer really are. They have an image of what they think a deer hunter might look like or who they might be. And I think it was just important to show that, hey, you know, without deer hunters and without deer on the landscape, conservation would look completely different. There would be hardly any funding available for it. It would just be entirely different from how it is today. And part of a research project that we're spearheading with a lot of other state agencies called the Southeast Deer Partnership aims to educate the rest of the country and non-hunters and even other hunters alike, you know, to really show how important deer are. And I wanted to kind of cherry pick a few of my favorite stats from some of that research that we've done as part of that project to kind of show, like, hey, this is the impact deer and deer hunters are having, and it's pretty significant.
Yeah. Would you, I mean, absolutely. I might be jumping the horse here, putting the cart before the horse, asking this question, but you know, the way I kind of read the article, and this isn't to mean that, people who aren't deer hunters that are only turkey hunters or who are only, you know, coyote hunters or whatever else that.
Yeah. Ducks hunters. I mean,
right. Yeah. That there are important, but the way I kind of read that and the way I've always kind of felt is that deer hunting or whitetail, they're, for lack of a better term, they're like the bell cow in the conservation, you know, generating cog of America. You know, I mean, you've got elk hunting, mule deer, but it just seems like whitetail bring in the most every year. They have, you know, the highest numbers. And so I think that's, you know, important. I mean, I was just thinking after I read your article, I was like, can you imagine the USA without whitetail deer in it? Like, what would hunting look like? What would conservation look like now compared to if they were just gone? All of a sudden, snap your fingers and every whitetail's gone. I can't imagine how much money would disappear from conservation. So let's get into the article. Let's talk about kind of, you know, we can go through each point and just kind of, you know, go from there.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, if deer were to disappear off the landscape like that, that would be detrimental to conservation as a whole. And, you know, we'll kind of show that here throughout this article. So I'm happy to dive right in.
Let's do it. All right. So point one, which I've got the article up, but I keep going back and forth. So, the first heading, I guess you'd call it, is, a bunch of pictures. Hunter dollars fund non-hunting wildlife research. So let's talk about that first topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as of course we know, but a lot of the general public doesn't know that state wildlife agencies are primarily funded through license sales and ammunition and hunting equipment that that has an 11% excise tax on it through the Pittman-Robertson Act, which is one of the best, if not the best, models of conservation in the world. We're one of the few places in the world that actually does it this way. So hunters have imposed that tax on themselves for decades. And we agree that, hey, we're gonna have this tax and we're gonna keep this tax so we can fund what we love by purchasing things that allow us to do what we love. As part of that Southeast Deer Partnership project that we're a part of, our research found that about 80% of wildlife agency funding comes directly through hunting license sales. You know, that could be deer hunting licenses, waterfowl licenses, duck stamps, you know, elk tags, all that type of stuff. But when you look at numbers, that's primarily driven by deer hunters just because there are so many more deer hunters as compared to other species. So the vast majority of funding for wildlife agencies comes directly from license sales purchased by deer hunters. And of course, we know, you know, state agencies manage more than just deer. They manage for more than game. They manage a lot of non-game wildlife species, at risk, endangered, threatened species. So all that money is going directly back into conservation, you know, as a whole, not just for deer management, but encompasses habitat and on the ground work for all these other species as well. And deer purchases are driving that for sure.
Do you have any idea what the percentage of like tag, like just say, I mean, ballpark wise, of like of all tags sold, your tags, is there a like ratio that's in there of like what percentage of tags are deer tags or licenses?
That's a really good question. I do not know that off the top of my head, but I would imagine it's pretty substantial. It may be in that report when we contracted with a research firm to help us find some of the numbers for this project. They sent back like a super detailed, like 250 page report with numbers and stats, everything down to regional, national, state level, and even county level specific data as well in certain cases. So I'm sure that information's out there, but I do not know off the top of my head.
Okay, so Ben might not know the percentage and he might not know the number two, but let's just guess. Like if you had to guess what the number two animal in America was as far as tag sales, Andy, Micah. Micah's gone. I figured it was going to happen. Micah just dropped. Laney's sick. She's being a little distraction, and you know it's okay. So Micah, see you later, man. Andy, if you had to guess, what would be like the number two animal in America that you think has, you know, tag sales wise outside of the white-tailed deer?
Well, I have to say it's turkey, but
I was gonna say turkey, but
that'd be my best guess.
I kind of want to go ducks. So I'm either going to go with turkey or ducks.
That'd be a very good, like.
I'm going to call it. It's a bird, right? That's what we're saying. It's a bird. Ben, yeah. Do you have any idea? Do you know what the number two animal is? I mean, I know we don't know the percentage, but do you know the number two tag sales are?
Yeah. So you guys are right. It is turkey. Just based on the sheer number of license sales and the number of hunters we have out there, there's roughly somewhere in the ballpark of about 10 million deer hunters, and we measure that through license sales. And in second place after that is turkey hunters with just 3 million. So there's a huge gap there, but turkeys still are number two.
Nice. I bet ducks are number three, though, so I was close. Who knows?
You're right. Ducks are water number three.
See? We're smart, Andy. We're smart.
You're on a roll.
Well, but that's just kind of –
I'd have to guess like
– Go ahead, Andy.
If that's 10, you know, what did you say, 10 million deer sales, 3 million turkeys in second, you would have to say that deer overall, I'm going to just guess, is, you know, 70%. I mean, if you had to ballpark that, you know, if it starts declining from turkey, right, and I'm guessing pretty rapidly, turkey and ducks are probably 3 and 2 million, if something like that. After that, it goes so far down, out of 15 million sales, 10 of them. I mean, I'm just
ballparking
6%, yeah. But yeah,
you could almost ascertain that deer tag sales are more than the next five or more combined. You know what I'm saying? And what's crazy is if you think about it, number two and number three on the list are both birds, right? You got turkey and then a waterfowl bird. Right. So that just kind of a perfect synopsis of your first point there, Ben, was without the white tail, what does turkey and duck hunting look like? You know, now I'm not saying turkey and duck hunting doesn't, right. It's not like they aren't doing anything to lift their own weight here, but it's just like, that's kind of what I was thinking about. What if I said, if I snapped my fingers and deer disappeared off the face of this planet, what would the rest of them look like? Because now we only have an animal that's got 3 million sales per year. Might go up since there's not a deer to hunt now. But also, we all know the turkey's not doing amazing right now, and you know, population-wise. So we go from 3 million turkey sales to 7 million. What's that do to the turkey population all of a sudden? Now it's even worse off. So, you know, they're all important to, you know, a conservation model. But that's just kind of a crazy point that, you know, that it's so much greater from a wild or a tag sales difference in the country. So interesting first point, that's for sure. Any more to add on that also, Ben?
Yeah, that's kind of, you hit the nail on the head there with why I wanted to write this article, because, you know, it really does factor if we were to lose deer hunter, all these others that we know and love, we love to hunt, that, you know, do contribute a lot to conservation, they would suffer as well, because such a high percentage is coming directly from deer hunters. So, you know, if you look at the article there, a couple of years ago, deer hunters alone contributed almost $300 million to state agencies strictly through license sales. That's not counting firearm ammunition and all the other stuff that falls under that Pittman-Robertson Act. So
it's huge.
$300 million in 1 year just from deer hunting licenses alone. I mean, that is a ton of money. And if you were to lose that, it would just collapse. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy.
No doubt.
All right, so point two is public land acquisition and enhancement. Let's get into that one.
Yeah, this one was particularly interesting. I'm always fascinated what state agencies are doing to, you know, non-game and wildlife species as well, and how deer kind of plays a role in that. You know, there's so many initiatives out there that vary from state to state that, again, are funded largely from deer hunting licenses and by deer hunters, because that money going to the agencies goes directly towards a lot of restoration efforts and habitat management and things that really have nothing to do with deer. You know, the example I used in there from the state I live in now, in Alabama, they used PR dollars, Pittman-Robertson dollars, that was largely funded by deer hunting to reintroduce bald eagles to certain areas, reestablish nesting populations. They've brought back threatened species and things like that. But with the public land acquisition, you know, that money is allowing agencies to purchase land and open that for access for the public to use, whether that's for hunting, camping, fishing, hiking, you know, all types of recreation, specific hunting. So really, just by being able to provide that funding, it opens the door for all these other initiatives that really have nothing to do with deer. And, you know, from a conservation standpoint, that is just as important as ensuring we have animals to hunt, is providing access and recreational opportunity for folks to get outside and just be in the outdoors, whether they hunt or not.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, so absolutely. Obviously.
You can connect the dots from that 300. Sorry, Mike or Nate.
Oh, you're good, bud. Go ahead.
You can connect the dots from that 300 some million to the land purchases that are used for everything else. You know, without that funding, obviously, that nothing else happens. You don't have the resources to do those other activities, like you said.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you've got state agencies, you know, actively managing and improving the land on over, you know, probably roughly about 5 million acres, I think was the most recent estimate. That's a lot of land. And, you know, like I mentioned in the article, it's not just deer using that land. It's, you know, it's turkey, it's waterfowl, it's squirrels, it's rabbits, it's all the other species that we love to hunt, that we love to watch. You know, tons of songbirds will benefit from that habitat management. Just hundreds and hundreds of species benefit from the land that's being improved, largely funded by deer.
Yeah. I can only imagine, like, obviously we're from Missouri and so has Ben. And we all know that, like, Missouri's got some awesome public land. We've got a bunch of it. I almost wonder, like, how much less would we have if the whitetail, once again, the whitetail didn't exist. Like, I don't know exactly off the top of my head how many millions of acres are in the state of Missouri, but I bet that number would be minimum half if there weren't whitetail on the landscape. Minimum. Could be wrong, but I bet that's close to right. I mean,
it's either that, or you would have to pay so much the other animals to make up for it.
Right, exactly. Yep, that's for sure.
You know, it all varies from state to state, but if you look at all the operating budgets for a lot of the agencies, you know, the state of Virginia, I know they keep very detailed records on this type of stuff. 25% of the entire agency is funded directly from deer hunting license sales. So imagine you lose deer hunters and you lose a quarter of your funding. And, you know, when you have an operating budget as large as some of these bigger states do, that is a ton of money that is being removed from conservation that just isn't available. And, you know, without deer, that wouldn't be there. So that's a pretty substantial percentage. And I'm sure some states are way higher, some are way lower, but you know, to lose a quarter of your funding for anything, you know, think about losing a quarter or a quarter of, you know, anything like that, that's going to be detrimental to what you're able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to give people a quick, our audio is doing pretty good, so I'm going to keep going. Our video is just doing just hot dog shit right now. So the YouTube folks who are on YouTube right now, sorry, it is what it is. We're recording on a Friday night at 8 o'clock. I didn't figure internet would be a problem right now, but I do have T-Mobile internet, and it usually is pretty good. Right now it's not doing amazing. Yeah. So audio is doing okay.
Damn gamers.
Yeah. Well, I texted my daughter. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I was on my phone real quick. I texted my daughter to get my son off of Fortnite right now. So maybe that'll help, but it is what it is. So we're going to keep trudging along because the audio is doing pretty good. You know, a little bit of stuff here and there, but no big deal. So, yeah. So point number two was one. I don't know. It just like me, Andy, and Micah, we go out west every year elk hunting, and we are always on public land, right? Well, I know the RMEF is big for that, but we'd be silly not to think the white-tail deer is not funding a lot of the public land out west in states that don't even have whitetail, you know? But that money's going back into conservation somehow. And so, like, just imagine how much land we might not be hunting on, Andy, if there weren't the white-tailed deer driving, you know, conservation forward. So another awesome point from the public land acquisition standpoint, Ben. Let's see. Number three. By the way, you keep scrolling and there's a picture of Lindsey Thomas with a big-ass snake in his hand. Don't like that. Snakes freak me out.
That's why the picture's not me holding the snake. My dad always makes fun of me. Anytime we come across a snake when we're out on the family property back in Missouri, you know, doing anything, I freak out. He's supposed to be a wildlife biologist. Yeah, I'm not a herpetologist. I'm a snake. I have nothing to do with them.
Exactly.
So what we're doing is deer hunters, able to have them on the official. Great, but you keep them away from me, that's for sure.
Yep. All right, so we go from public land to private land. So point number three is deer hunters enhance private lands. Let's get into that one.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's way the old days when, you know, our early days as Paul back in the day, you know, that organization, you know, we were founded as an organization to help private landowners manage their land specifically for deer. And we still stand pretty strongly with that mindset. And we still support and, you know, highly encourage the quality deer management philosophy. And with that comes a ton of land management. You know, that's what it's all about. You're not going to have a lot of landscape if you give proper landscape. So through a lot of the share initiatives that state agencies have, you know, people think of state agency, they typically think of public land. You know, they understand that there's more to it than, you know, maintaining these conservation areas or maintaining parks and things like that. There's so many cost share programs out there where landowners have the opportunity to work with state wildlife agencies and actually get a little bit of money in return for improving the habitat on their land. You know, you've got there's CRP initiatives, the Conservation Reserve Program, where state wildlife agencies may help you restore native wildflowers and native forbs and some of the native vegetation there on your property. They'll help you manage for that, which is beneficial to a ton of species. We've got the Deer Management Assist Program in a lot of states. Essentially what it is incentivize landowners to manage their land for deer and keep track of, you know, what the deer population is doing. So you get some benefits with that and keeping detailed records of all the deer that you harvest, the age structure, sex ratio, your observation data, what you're seeing out in the field, that you can actually get a lot of extra tags to harvest some extra deer on your property. You get access to a state wildlife agency deer biologist that will come out and kind of help you assess your deer population, assess your habitat, give you some assistance there. You know, there's just so many opportunities for us as private landowners to work with the agencies hand in hand rather than, you know, you hear a lot of cases of them kind of butting heads and I don't want the government telling me what to do on my own land. It's like, well, that's not the case. You know, there's so many opportunities to work together and help one another. And that was one thing that I really wanted to make folks aware of with this article, is that, you know, the state agencies are here to help us as conservationists, as hunters, as landowners. And it benefits all of us to manage our own private lands. You know, just because a deer is on property doesn't mean it is going to always be on your property, or that it necessarily stays there. So wouldn't you want all the other surrounding properties around you to have great habitat as well, to support more wildlife? And, you know, state agencies can definitely make that happen with all these cost share initiatives. And through these partnerships, state agencies and landowners together are managing almost 60 million acres of private land, which is a ton of land. And that would not be possible without that cooperation.
Yeah, and we feel that. Oh,
I'm actually just in process of signing up. I think I'm lagging. Sorry.
Yeah, you're good, but say what you're saying.
Actually, I'm in the process of signing up my farm for a CRP buffer strip program to help. I believe it's a quail habitat program, but I mean, my main focus on that property is deer, and I know it's going to help that as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to get paid money for establishing that, and that's funded through conservation programs. They kick in. I don't remember off the top of my head what the percentage was, but there's a portion of the payment of that CRP that comes from conservation to incentivize me to do that, to take land out of production agriculture and put it into habitat.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think a big part of that is, you know, a lot of people just don't know that programs like that may exist in their state, and they may have an old cattle pasture or something. And it's like, man, I don't know what to do with this. I don't have the time or the resources or the money to convert this into old field habitat or anything like that. And, you know, you call your state agency. They've got all types of programs where they'll help you with some of that funding, or you can use their, you know, equipment, and their biologists will come out and help you with that. So there's just so much opportunity to improve public land and, you know, or I'm sorry, private land. And, you know, as deer managers and deer hunters, obviously that's huge in this industry, is the old, you know, the food plot programs that so many people have. You know, I used to manage a quality deer management farm. I say farm, but it was free range. There was no fence or anything, but it was about 1,000 acres that a private landowner hired me to manage for him right out of college. And that was what I did for a living for over 4 years, was planted food plots, burned fields, did timber stand improvement, you know, all that type of stuff. So there is definitely a demand for it. And deer hunters are probably the number one land managers in the country, because our heart and soul is in it. And we want to, you know, benefit the deer herd and ultimately benefit ourselves as hunters.
I mean, what Andy is doing at his farm is a perfect example. He's signing up for something that's a quail program. And he's doing it, well, for several reasons, but it's mainly for whitetail, right? We know that. I mean, Andy was talking to us a couple, you know, months ago about it. The outside 20 feet of my fields don't do anything for me anyways. So I'm going to sign up for this program. I'm going to help the quail habitat. And what I really care about, though, is deer. And so because Andy cares so much about deer, quail are going to get helped at his farm. You know what I'm saying? So that's a perfect example of the deer driving conservation right there. You know, quail are kind of getting that cannon fodder of benefit from Andy, you know, doing that at his farm. And we kind of see that, you know. I mean, Andy is a farmer. I'm married to a girl who grew up on a farm and still has farms. And we see, you know, like stuff happening at farms where we're like, oh, that's good. Or, you know, for instance, at one of the farms I used to hunt at, or still hunt at technically, the neighboring farm lost every tree that existed on it. And it immediately became worse for deer, right? So, you know, like, you see the differences in land management helping and or hurting deer. So, yeah, man, that's a great point. And I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there. In Missouri, we have the MRAP program now, which is private land being made available to the public in certain scenarios. It's not always deer hunting. You might just be able to go bird watching or nature watching, but that's a cool program. We had someone on right when the program was kind of launching, and, you know, that's state agencies kind of reaching out to local landowners and saying, hey, you know, how can we, you know, is there ways for us to be able to allow public usage by paying you for letting people on? And how do you think that money comes? Where do you think that money comes from? you know, hunters, you know, all the people who cry about us shooting deer or hurting those precious little animals or whatever, we're the ones who drive helping them more than anybody, right? So that's a perfect example. The last 2 points Ben had were public land and private land. And all the stuff that, you know, deer hunters, not deer hunters, the white-tailed deer is doing for both those types of land, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to the actual land management aspect of that, so many other species benefit directly from the land management practices that we do for deer, right? So, you know, prescribed fire and forest stand improvement and promoting the native seed bank germination and stimulating the understory and forested areas, you know, all that stuff not only benefits deer, and that is why we do that management, is to benefit deer and make our deer hunting better. But a lot of people don't realize you're positively impacting hundreds of other species that are utilizing that exact same habitat as a direct result of what you're managing for deer on your hunting property. So it's just, you know, I could go on and just hammer off all these bullet lists, but it's, you know, it really is as simple as what's good for deer is good for many other wildlife species as well, because of the, not only the dollars that go back into it, but the actual habitat improvements that take place.
Yeah. It's not very typical to say what's good for a deer is bad for another one. Now, I'm sure there are species out there that, you know, that something that might be good for a turkey might not be necessarily amazing for, I don't know, just say an animal's name. But, you know, it's overall, like you said, what's good for a deer is good for a turkey, is good for a quail, is good for a, you know, coyote. You know, unfortunately, what's good for a deer is also good for the predators typically, right? So, hey, that's how it works. But then that gets us more coyotes to hunt, so we're happy about that anyways. Okay, so, and then point number four here, conservation groups work for deer and other wildlife. We kind of already talked about that, but that's point number four.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many other conservation groups out there, you know, these NGOs, non-governmental organizations like the National Deer Association that does a lot of great work on the ground. You know, you've got National Wild Turkey Federation, Ducks Unlimited, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. There's so much more to it than just state wildlife agencies, right? So you've got all these other organizations that are actively doing, you know, similar things to what we're doing, but just for other wildlife species. And of course, as we've talked about over the last 30 minutes or so, we know that, you know, what benefits deer, what benefits turkey, they all benefit one another. So we work with a lot of these other conservation groups, and these other groups work together, you know, outside of us as well to benefit conservation as a whole. And, you know, a prime example of that on our end is the public lands initiative that we have going on right now that my supervisor, Matt Ross, who you guys have had on in the past, he oversees that program now. It's a 20-year master stewardship agreement that we have with the U.S. Forest Service. So we're working with the U.S. Forest Service to improve public land access and hunting opportunities and wildlife habitat on public lands across the country. We've been holding tons of volunteer events where we get a group of folks to come out and maybe plant some oak trees, or even as simple as pick up trash and kind of renovate some areas on these public lands and these national parks and things like that. So by partnering with other groups to work together, you know, from the view of conservation as a whole, it's just benefiting, you know, a whole slew of other species, all these different groups, and the people that ultimately use that land. We had a goal of improving, I think it was 1 million acres of public land by like 2027, and we're already at about 800,000 of that. So we're way ahead of schedule, and we are just, man, we are balls to the wall with that program, and it is a huge success right now. As we improve stuff on one national forest, we get calls from another national forest that sees what we're doing and sees some of the education and outreach that comes from that, and they jump right in. So it's a huge program, and it's growing fast, and we're gaining partners with that as well. So, you know, we're all in this together. We're hunters, we're conservationists, we're passionate about the outdoors. So the key is going to be working together, no matter what your favorite species is, right? You know, it's all about cooperation, and we're all on the same page.
Yeah, no, like that's, for I sure. mean, that's kind of the idea of like this show was, and the article, I felt, you know, it's not that like you're puffing your chest out like, ah, look, and like, we love whitetails. Whitetail's probably my first love. I would, if I could only hunt one thing the rest of my life, I would probably choose whitetail deer. Andy might choose coyotes, and coyotes would be a close second for me, but it's not that we're saying, ah, whitetails are better than everything else. No, but because I don't give two shits about mule deer right now. I've never hunted a mule deer. I don't really care to at the moment, but I still care about them, and I still want them to flourish. I don't really turkey hunt, but I still care about them, and I want them to flourish, because when turkeys are doing good, likely deer are doing good. You know, so I don't hunt ducks, but I want duck hunters to, you know, have an awesome freaking winter. You know, my brother-in-law Grant is a big duck hunter, and you know, I don't want to hear him talking about there's no ducks left because we don't have any money to, you know, buy lands or, you know, take care of the areas. So it's not that like deer are better than anything. It just so happens that, you know, deer drive a lot of what we see in conservation, and as a result can help all these other species one way or the other, right? So that's what I got out of the article, not saying, hey, deer are better than you, but hey, deer are awesome, and this is the way they can help, you know, the quail or the whatever, the river otter, freaking whoever, you know, it can help all kinds of species, and we're in this together as conservationists, you know, whether we just hunt deer or we just hunt whatever, it's all, you know, one big family that's contributing to kind of the way I kind of thought of it is like one pot, right? Yeah, I'm putting more money in as a whitetail deer because, you know, I've got the best paying job, but we're still one family under the same roof of conservation is kind of the way I took it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, like I said, we're all on the same team. We're all in this together. No matter what your species of choice is, you know, we're conservationists, and we want to do what's best for the habitat, what's best for wildlife, you know, both game and non-game wildlife. And I think that's important for people to understand, which is a driving factor behind this, was that, you know, we're working with other people, other groups to spread the message of that and to really show that, hey, we're what people might think of as your average deer hunter from the outside looking in. We're not just, you know, Elmer Fudd out here trying to shoot something for the hell of it, right? We care about the land. We care about management. We care about other species. And we mostly, you know, most importantly, care about the deer that we hunt. We hunt because we care about these animals, not because we hate them. We don't want to kill them because we hate them. We hunt them because we care about them. We want to manage them, and we want to utilize them to feed our families. And that's what I think gets overlooked from the general public. And it's important for folks to realize that.
Yeah. Even predator hunting, right? Like Andy and I love coyote hunting, but we'd be lying if we didn't say we actually kind of like them, right? Like we talk about how we want to kill them. We want to kill them all because they're, you know, predators and they're killing all the turkeys. We would both cry if every coyote.
I have immense respect for him.
Yeah, you and I would both cry if every coyote was eliminated from the state of Missouri. Right. You know, we don't want them gone.
I have absolute respect for them. They're impressive animals.
They're one of the most impressive animals I've ever, you know, cared to learn about, if you really think about it. So, like, even predators that, you know, you talk about, we don't eat coyote meat. I'll be the first to admit it. I'm not going to touch that shit. I see what they eat, but we still hunt them, but we still like them. Like I'll admit it. I like a coyote. So it's all part of like one big family that's, you know, working together. And what's good for prey animals is going to be good for predators, and it's going to be good for hunters all in the end. So that article was awesome. Great title, by the way. Did you come up with the title?
I wish I could take credit for that, but that was Lindsay Thomas who kind of tweaked the title a little bit. He's kind of a wordsmith when it comes to, you know, catching people's attention, just like
it
did.
Exactly what it did.
So he's real good.
I read that title and it went boom. Come read me. Like I read that immediately after reading the title. So good job, Lindsay. Well done. So Ben, so what's going on at the NDA? What do you guys got in the pipe, and what are you working on right now?
Man, we've got a ton of stuff going on right now. This has probably been one of the best years we've had in a really long time. You know, we're starting to hire some new staff. We just had a partnership with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, and we hired 5 DMAP biologists in the state of Arkansas. That's a joint partnership with us and the Arkansas State Agency there. So we actually have 5 deer management assistance biologists on the ground in Arkansas that is partly funded with through the NDA as well as the state agency. And we're working on a couple of other positions with some other states right now to have kind of similar positions there. But we just had a couple of our Working for Wildlife tour events. That's a partnership we have with Meat Eater. As I mentioned before, our public lands initiative, you know, those are some volunteer field days where we can get to spend some time with some of our supporters and volunteers and get them out and active and, you know, planting trees and cleaning up some of our public lands and building birdhouses and that type of stuff. You know, kind of goes back to how it benefits more than just deer. So we're doing a lot of things like that. And from my end of things, you know, I oversee our deer steward program. So we've got a couple awesome deer steward classes coming up. We've got our online Deer Steward 1 course, which is always available. And that's just a comprehensive A to Z overview of all things deer and habitat management and biology. That one's a lot of fun, and we just recently refilmed and reproduced that with some pretty heavy hitters in the deer research world. We've got Craig Harper, Gino D'Angelo, Will Goldsby, Marcus Lashley, and Bronson Strickland are instructors in that course too. So if you want to think about some of the biggest names in deer research and management, there you go right there. That's a hell of a lineup. Here in 2 weeks, we've got one of our first classes that we've ever put on. It's brand new. It's a property design and hunting setups course. That'll be in South Carolina. So we're kind of showing you, you know, we'll take you out to different tree stand types and different tree stand setups and show like, hey, here is how you would want to set this up from a bow hunting perspective, or here's how you may want to hunt this area, you know, this pinch point or in between a bedding and bedding area and a food plot or something like that. So it's really going to be hunter focused and hunting strategy focused, which is something we really haven't done before. We're doing a learn and burn prescribed fire workshop in Michigan in July. So we've never done one of those before either. A few years ago, Meat Eater actually gifted the NDA a 64-acre property up there in southwestern Michigan to kind of showcase some of the management that we're doing. So we're going to be conducting a couple prescribed burns up there here next month and let folks kind of get their hands dirty, get their hands on a drip torch and show them how to actually utilize prescribed fire. And then lastly, our Deer Steward 2 course is kind of the next step up from that online class. We take what we teach you in that online course and show you how to actually apply that on the ground. So we travel to different properties every year all over the country, and we'll actually go out and look at some forested areas, look at some food plots, look at some old fields, and get into the nitty gritty management of that. You know, we'll work with the state agency to bring us a couple deer carcasses. We'll show you a necropsy, how to field dress a deer, how to pull an aged jawbones, all that stuff. So if you want to learn about deer management and actually learn about it by getting your hands dirty and doing some of the stuff, there's no better class out there than the Deer Steward 2 course. It's a ton of fun. I did it several years ago, almost a decade ago now, long before I was an employee, and it made me a better hunter, better deer manager, and just really helped me understand what all goes into a deer management program. So a lot of fun stuff coming up.
So that's awesome.
Those sound fantastic.
Yeah. So for the listener, if they want to get involved with NDA or, you know, follow them, how can they contact NDA and Ben if you want to give out your info as well?
Yeah, absolutely. My email is super simple. It's just Ben, B-E-N, at deerassociation.com. If you're interested in our education programs, if you got a question about deer, reach out to me anytime there. I'm more than happy to talk to anyone and answer questions. And, you know, always looking forward to meeting new people and meeting new friends in the deer world. We're also on all the social media platforms, you know, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. It's all just at Deer Association. As well. And then I've got an Instagram as well that's kind of half my deer stuff, half my family stuff. And that's Westfall_NDA if you want to give me a follow or reach out to me on that as well. So, yeah, you could just Google National Deer Association and all kinds of stuff will pop up with all of our educational resources, all of our pages, our videos, all that stuff.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. You know what's crazy is I don't remember. Like, I remember, what was it, maybe about 4 years ago, close to that, when QDMA and Was it the NDA? What was it?
Yeah, it was the NDA. Okay. It was the National Deer Alliance.
There we go.
So that was kind of the policy sister program to us. We helped start that with a couple other organizations, and that was focused on legislation and policy. So we kind of absorbed that as the QDMA and ended up just changing our name and kind of rebranded.
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember when that happened. You know, there was a lot of people that were freaking out about it a little bit, and then it happened, and now I don't remember the other way, you know, but that's pretty cool. So, Ben Westfall, we appreciate you coming on and talking about how freaking awesome white-tailed deer are when it comes to helping drive conservation in our country. And we appreciate what you do for the National Deer Association as well, man.
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me, and hopefully I didn't bore anybody too much by throwing out all these numbers and stuff out there. But I think it's important for folks to realize, you know, both hunters and non-hunters alike, that the deer are important, and, you know, what we do for deer as hunters are important as well. So I'm happy to talk about deer anytime. So
great information. It's good to put numbers behind opinions and facts. I mean, that way you have something to relate it to.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Well, Ben, we appreciate you coming on, brother.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen.
All right.